Yevamos, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Dalet, 7-4. In the previous Mishnah, we had talked about the case of the ubor, the unborn fetus, which has this asymmetric effect on a woman, whereby she, even if she's a bas kohen and could eat truma, that ubor from the unborn fetus from the regular zar, non-kohen, prohibits her, poselos her, makes her she can't eat truma. And on the flip side, if she's a Bas Yisrael, the fact that she's pregnant, non-Kohen, and the fact that she's pregnant with a child whose father is a Kohen until the child's born, yet doesn't allow her to, yes, eat Truma. So we'll actually have the cases, the first case of our Mishnah, so I'll flesh that out again, just to repeat everything and make it clear. But the point of our Mishnah here and the next ones is to identify other halachic phenomena, like the unborn fetus, which has that same sort of asymmetric effect, where on the one hand, it's can be posel her, it can make her that she, even though she otherwise would have been able to eat truma as a bas kohen, she still cannot for some reason. But on the other hand, the very same phenomenon, if it applies to a woman who otherwise would not be able to eat truma as a bas Yisrael, just because she has some kind of connection to a kohen now, that connection is not enough to allow her to, yes, eat truma or eat truma yet. The basic point is, as I said before, the Pasuk talks about a kinyan kaspo, that the Kohen has to have a kinyan, some sort of acquisition in the woman, and of her rights anyways, to make that woman part of his family, to allow her now to eat truma, and that's going to be lacking here. So again, the cases are, the first is ha'ubar, the unborn fetus. So the case is, if a woman, let's start with a bas kohen. A bas kohen could eat truma. If she marries the Yisrael, she starts not to eat truma. If the Yisrael dies, she then once again reverts to her father's household and once again could eat truma, even if the father's dead. The point is she reverts back to her kohen, you know, roots. Unless she's pregnant. If she's pregnant with the Yisrael's child, that's really enough to be postal her, to keep her back from making her invalid, rendering her invalid from eating truma. On the flip side, if she is a Bas Yisrael who marries a Kohen, so while they're married, she could eat Truma. When he dies, so now if she has no other children, she can't eat Truma. Even if she's pregnant, that Ubar, the Amor fetus inside of her, which is a future Kohen, now doesn't have the capacity to be Ma'achilina, to permit her to eat Kohen, to eat Truma yet. She has to wait until that child is born. Yeah, that's the first case. The second case is Hayavam, the Yavam, the brother-in-law. So the case is, again, you have a brother-in-law from another, I'll refer to them as mixed marriages. I don't know, you have a Kohen and a non-Kohen who are marrying. So again, if on the one case, and the point is, let's say the scenario is that this woman is a Bas Kohen, and she marries Reuven, the Tzar, the non-Kohen. So she's attached to Reuven, and while they're married, she can't eat Truma. When he dies, she should go back to her father's household and yes, eat Truma. If they die childless and Reuven has a brother, there's a Zika that connects her to Reuven's brother, Shimon. Shimon's not a Kohen, and that he's the Yavam. And the point is that connection, that Zika, that connection to Shimon, the non-Kohen, is enough to preclude her, to forbid her, to be postal her from eating Truma until she resolves the Zika. Once she gets Chalitza from him, then she could once again be considered not connected to him and go back to eating Truma. But until then, she is restricted. On the flip side, if she was originally a Bas Yisrael, and she marries a Kohen, so she could eat Truma while she's married to him. If he dies and they're childless, and she has a brother-in-law with whom she has a Zika, he's the Yavam, and he's also a Kohen. But they're not yet married. You haven't got the old Kenyan in effect yet, Kenyan Kaspo, it's not his wife yet. So that, therefore, even though she has a Zika to Shimon the Kohen, in the meantime, she's still a Bas Yisrael, a Tzar, and therefore she may not eat Truma. So the fact that she has a Yavam is, on the one hand, postal her if it could make it that she can't yet eat truma. She can't eat truma if he's a Yisrael and she's a bas kohen. But it's enoma velo ma'achilin. Even if he is a kohen, he can't yet, the yavam who's a kohen can't yet entitle her to eat truma until they get married. The next case similarly is va'erusin. Erusin, as we know now, is the first of the two stages of marriage. I'll call it betrothal or something like an engagement, but it's a marriage, so we'll call it betrothal here. So he gives her a ring, she's now married. But they haven't moved in together, so it's the first of the two stages, and the suin still happens later. So, midda oraisa, erusin constitutes a kinyan. He gives her the ring, or the star, whatever it is, and she accepts it, and therefore she transfers her ishus rights to him, and there that's the kinyan, and therefore now she, if he is a Kohen, she should be permitted to eat Truma through him. And that's true Midoraisa. But Midorabanan, we're going to have a rabbinic enactment which makes this asymmetric, which means that if it's a Bas Kohen who marries Erisin, betroths the first step to a non-Kohen Azar, so now she's part of his household, she's acquired by him in part, and that's enough to make it so she is now prohibited from eating Truma. Hence, the Erisin is postlin, and the Erisin of a Bas Kohen to a Yisrael makes it now that she becomes Psula, she no longer can eat Truma anymore because she's married to him through Erisin. On the flip side, it's asymmetric, because if she was a Bas Yisrael who got, now I'll call it engaged, betrothed to a Kohen, Erisin, so that Midoraisa should be enough now to allow her to eat Truma. But the rabbi said, no, she shouldn't eat Truma yet. The reason why is because in the time of the Mishnah, there was a significant delay between the time of Erisin getting whatever, step one of marriage, and Nisuin, step two. And during that first stage, after accepting Erisin, she would still normally live in her father's home, in her parents' home, until the time for the wedding comes, perhaps even a year later. So for that year, she's living at home. And although the Torah says now she could accept gift packages from her husband, and even if they're truma, she could eat them, the rabbis were concerned this woman's living with her at home, with her siblings, and she's going to invariably, you know, come to forget the rules, and she's not used to them, and she'll end up sharing her gift package with the siblings. The siblings are not allowed to eat truma. That's an issur d'oraisa, and therefore the rabbi said, we're not getting into that. We're saying until she moves out of her parents' home and into her husband's home, the Kohen, she may not eat truma. And that being the case, Erisin is postlum lo ma'achilin, because Erisin to a Yisrael will postl her from eating further truma, even though she's a bas Kohen, whereas lo ma'achilin, just because she's now an arusa to a Kohen, doesn't yet permit her to eat truma yet, till she moves in with them through Nisuin. Next is Va'cheresh. The Cheresh is the deaf mute. Deaf mute is someone who lacks da'as. He cannot legally effect a kinyan. He's not considered like he's, yeah. And that being the case, there's no such thing on a d'oraisa level of a Cheresh getting married. The Cheresh who gives the ring to the woman, she accepts it, that's not effective. They're not married mid-d'oraisa. The rabbi said, yes, a Cheresh could get married. And that being the case, on a rabbinic level, we recognize the marriage between a cherish and a woman. And that being the case, if you had, there's an asymmetry that's going to emerge. Because why? If you have the woman originally being a Kohen, a Bas Kohen, and she marries she marries the cherish, who's the Yisrael, since rabbinically we're recognizing that marriage, she now becomes psula from eating truma anymore. Even though it's only rabbinic, mid-d'oraisa, she could be permitted because there's no marriage, no connection, no kinyan. On the flip side, if she had been a Bas Yisrael, she is a Bas Yisrael, and the Cheresh is a Kohen, and now they quote-unquote get married, well, the marriage is only rabbinically recognized, but mid-d'oraisa is not a marriage. Therefore, she's not really married to him, there's no kinyan. Therefore, even though he's a Kohen and she's living with him, she's not allowed to eat Truma. Therefore, it says, postlin, the cherish can be postlin from eating truma because of the rabbinic marriage, if he's a Yisrael and she's a Kohenes, but velo machilin, but it's not strong enough as a cherish to entitle her to yes, eat truma if he's the Kohen and she is the Bas Yisrael. And finally, ben teisha shanim v'yom echad, the boy who's 9 years old in a day. In English, we really just call this a 9-year-old boy. The reason why is because you might have noticed many times in Chazal, they refer to a person as being like, you know, 9 years old in a day, or 13 years old in a day, or 3 years old in a day. The reason why we're saying that is because, like, if you're born on the 16th of Iyar, okay, so that's your birthday. So when the 15th of Iyar rolls around a year later, you've lived a full year. I'll call it 365 days, because that's the number you're used to. Not really, but anyways. So it's like you lived a whole year worth of days. So then when you come to your birthday, the anniversary of your birth, back to the 16th of Iyar of the next year, so now you've actually lived like a 366th day. We'll call it an extra day. So that's what we're saying. Now you're 1 year old and a day. Okay, that's the idea. So on your bar mitzvah, the anniversary of the day you were born, really you live the full 13 years plus one more day, the day of today, because you're living, this is like the, if you will, if you're born on the 16th of Iyar, so then this is like the 14th, 16th of Iyar you're at, 13 from your birthday till yesterday, and the 14th now is 13 in a day. So that's the point here. So 9 years old in a day, the same idea means a 9-year-old boy. And the idea is that the Chazal said that if a man and woman sleep together and the boy is less than 9 years old, that just doesn't count. It's not legally considered to be sleeping together. And that being the case, if he's less than 9 years old, so then that nothing happens. So let's say, for example, a girl sleeps with her brother, and he's less than 9 years old, so then it has no legal significance. So she doesn't become psula yet, right? That act doesn't make her into like a psula, even if they're, you know, and if otherwise it would be a iser karas, etc. Once he becomes 9 years old, their act of sleeping together has like legal significance. And that being the case, if the 9-year-old sleeps with her and the 9-year-old is not allowed to sleep with her, not allowed to be married because of some iser, even the mitzvahs ase, he's a mom's or whatever the story is, so she becomes forbidden from eating truma anymore as a bas kohen. On the flip side, he's only 9 years old. He can't get married yet. He's not 13. He hasn't got das. And therefore, even if they like act like husband and wife and move in together, kind of like the cheresh situation, since he can't actually affect the kinyan as a minor, so therefore, even if he's a kohen, it can't yet permit her to eat truma. That's what we mean here, therefore. So the 9-year-old boy is postlin. If they sleep together and he renders her invalid because they're an iser to be married, so then that act right enough is to make her that she can't eat truma ever again. But if they move in as husband and wife, ki'ilu, so to speak, but he's not yet 13, there's not a marriage, and therefore she is not permitted to eat truma, even though she's living and acting as the wife of a kohen. Now, like, new paragraph. Safek shu ben teisha shanim v'yomechad, safek she'eno. We'll have two cases here. This is the first one of the two sfeikas talking about restricting from eating truma. So the point is that since the iser of eating truma is an iser d'oraisa, a Torah prohibition, so therefore we are strict and a safek. If you have a safek, on a certain case, the rule is that safek d'oraisa l'chumra. If we're not sure if it's permitted, and this question mark looming overhead is pertaining to a d'oraisa issue, a Torah issue like eating truma, we go l'chumra, we rule strictly and say it's forbidden. That being the case, let's say the boy sleeps with the girl and we're not sure how old he was at the time. Was he 9 or wasn't he 9? So now they're standing in front of us, now look, he's 25 now, but who knows how old he was back then, we're not sure. So then we will have a suffix on our hands, and therefore we'll say suffix derives the chumra, we forbid her from eating truma, he's postal her, because we don't know what to do. Okay? At a suffix. Okay, it has to be fine. Now, similarly, suffix havi shte sirus, suffix lo havi. It's a new case here. We have a boy who's on his bar mitzvah. He gives a ring to a girl and says, Hariat Mekudeshli B'Tabatzu, and she accepts the ring, and now ostensibly they're married. The problem is that we're not sure if actually he's reached puberty yet. And if he hasn't reached puberty yet, bringing forth two hairs, so then he's not considered to be bar mitzvah. Bar mitzvah requires both ingredients, both the chronological age as also the onset of puberty. That being the case, we're not sure if his kedushin is actually effective. Maybe he wasn't yet a gadol, a halachic adult yet, because he didn't bring forth the two hairs, and therefore the kedushin is not a kedushin. So if he's a kohen, maybe she can eat truma, maybe she can't. If he's a non-kohen and she was a kohen, maybe now they're married and she can't eat truma, or maybe she still could if it wasn't binding. We don't know. Therefore, in those cases, we rule stringently and say we assume she can't eat truma because of the question, maybe it was valid, and we have to assume the worst because safek d'oraisa l'chumra. Now, we have one more case here. It's a totally new case, like out of the box. We're talking now with like pause everything, like new paragraph, and now we're going back to questions pertaining to Yibum. So here we go. Okay, so now to get your head around the next case of the mission, which is really, like I said, sort of going off topic here for a minute and back to Yivamos, let's just talk about it outside. Here's the case. You have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Shimon has a daughter named Leah. Reuven marries Leah, as well as another woman, Rachel. So Reuven has two wives, one of whom is his niece, his brother Shimon's daughter. So now, what's the din? If Reuven dies childless, so you recall from the first parak of the Masechta, the rule would be that Shimon certainly can't do Yibum with his own daughter, she's Nerva, and therefore not only is the daughter Leah Petura from doing Yibum, but also Tsarasa, also her co-wife, Rachel is also exempt, which means if the whole family tree is as it described it, Rachel, even though she has no relation to Shimon directly, is free to go and marry whoever she wants. There's no Zika at all. Fine. So now, what would happen, and this is the case of our Mishnah, if Reuven dies and he has no children, but Rachel also died. So if Rachel predeceased him, Rachel died first. So when Reuven dies, we take a photograph of the family tree. At that moment, we have a dead Reuven who has no children. We have one widow, Rachel, because Leah's dead. So one widow, Rachel. Rachel has no relationship at all to the surviving brother, Shimon. And therefore, Shimon would have to do Yibum or Chalitza with Rachel. If, on the other hand, Reuven died first, and then Leah died, so that would mean at the moment of death, the family tree looks like there's two widows, Rachel and Leah. Leah is an erva to Shimon. Shimon can't do Yibum with her, and therefore both she and her co-wives are exempt, and therefore everyone goes free. So the case of our Mishnah here is a suffix, and that's what's introduced here in our Mishnah. A suffix, we're not sure what happened first. Did Reuven die first, leaving two widows, in which case Shimon can do Yibum with neither, and both are free to go? Or what happens if Leah died first, in which case there's only one surviving widow, Rachel, and she has a Zika to Shimon, and he has to either perform Yibum or Chalitza before she can marry somebody else? So that's the case of our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nafal abayis alav al bas achiv. The house collapsed, and there are two people who died in the rubble. One is him, Reuven, and one is bas achiv, his brother's daughter, in my story here, Leah. Ve'en yadua eze meis rishon. We don't know which of the two, whether Reuven or his wife Leah, died first. But there is a co-wife, Tsarasa, meaning Rachel, choletzes v'lo misya bemes. She'll have to do chalitza v'shemen b'na yibum. Why? Because if Reuven died first, then she's really patura, and yibum would be forbidden in Isser Karis. But if Leah died first, then Rachel has a doraisa zika to Shimon, and she needs the yibum or chalitza. Therefore, the only possibility is to do chalitza. She has chalitza, and then she goes free to marry whoever she wants. And that Mishnah introduces that topic here because of the suffix that's associated in this particular case, like the other sfeikos on some level.